Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
Good morning, witches. It is March 18th, 2024. It is Monday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by the Weed Witch's Journal. So let's get your day going with a little magic. So we're taking a tea break. One, because I had to take a tea break. I had to kind of move like my whole life and business from one location to another. And I naively thought, oh, that'll take a week. No, not even a little, not even kind of. And we're just now back open. Just now the stocks are correct. It's been a journey. So that's why we took a break from tea. And I'm also grateful for anyone who ordered while we were closed and who was like really patient. I really appreciate it because, ooh, it was difficult. But we're talking flowers, and this was actually a suggestion from someone on our Patreon who I don't remember, and I feel so guilty because they kept suggesting it a lot, and I just never did, or I didn't know where to put that type of information. And then someone in a witch group chat I'm in, we sent this person tulips, and tulips are really beautiful right now, especially in New Orleans. And it made me want to talk about tulips. And so now we're talking about flowers. So this week we're talking about the pansy. Now, I tend to mix up pansies and poppies. I don't know if that's just me, but pansies are that flower from Alice in Wonderland. The really animated, I think they were like dogs. They were like puppies in Alice in Wonderland, but that's the pansy. So today we're talking about the history of pansies. And this is from littleflowerhut.com. So pansy comes from the French word pensée, which means remembrance or thought. It has a scientific name of Viola X. Witrachiana. It has names of pansy, Viola, violet, which can be interchangeable. On the other hand, there are certain distinctions that each one of these flowers possess. The hybrid of pansies are those with large blooms consisting of 4 to 5 petals pointing upwards with dark colored centers known as face. Other viola species come smaller and are more commonly perennials or annuals. In the late Middle English period, this plant was imported from France and called viola. The name's heart's ease was given by the people of Saint Euphrasia, which was meant to signify cheerfulness of the Greeks. So in other countries like Scandinavia, Scotland, Germany, this flower refers to stepmother, following a folktale. The tale was about a stepmother who was selfish. And this flower is also called flamola in Italy, which means little flame. So in 1812, Lady Mary Elizabeth Bennet introduced pansy flowers in the world of horticulture. It was the product of her crossbreeding project under her gardener, William Richardson. Following the introduction of this flower, many good florists and gardeners made their own cultivations. James, Lord Gambier, with the guidance of William Thompson, his gardener, crossed yellow viola with pale yellow viola, thus producing pansies. Many further cultivation followed, resulting in modern hybrids of a wide range of pansy varieties in different colors, such as yellow, orange, purple, violet, gold, white, and red. So this is an interesting headline, but it actually comes from 13 News Now, which is a weather channel. But I thought this was really interesting and I wanted to share. So the weather channel just impromptu decided to talk about the history of weather forecasting. And I thought this was really cool. So weather observation really started in 650 BC, and weather observation began in Babylonia. Then in 340 BC, Aristotle writes the kind of guide for weather observation known as Meteorologica. Then in 1400s, the 1600s, that was when the development of reliable weather instruments to come into play. So think of like thermostats, things where we could measure variables, measure it, the science. So when people talk about how like things that were once magic is now science and things that are now science were what is magic, that is like where I think the it changes, right? We go from these are just our theories of observation, which is what Meteorologica was when Aristotle was like, okay, here's how we're noticing things work. Let's try to make it make sense in a guide. But that was what, a thousand years before they could develop reliable instruments to actually measure it scientifically. So it always starts with we're just putting together things we're observing, like a guide. And I think that's what a lot of us do within witchcraft and that sort of thing. And then you just kind of have to wait until you can find instruments that can measure things, which we see people trying to do in the paranormal community. Whether they do it successfully, I don't know. I'm a little weary of the science of kind of ghost hunting devices, but we're seeing them trying to do that now, which is really, really cool. Then in the 1800s, the UK formed their weather kind of organization. It was called UK Met, where they essentially were doing observations around England of the weather. And again, I think this was such a cool segment for just like a regular weather station. But they actually share that weather forecasting was a form of witchcraft. So it was illegal in the UK. And again, that changed, right? That changed. And so like, again, when I talk about when not just me, but a bunch of people talk about what was science is now witchcraft, I know that's, or vice versa. I know that's really easy to like throw away as like, oh, people just say that. That's probably not true. This is a great example. Weather forecasting was witchcraft. It was illegal. But then they had instruments, right? And then they had organizations. And you can just kind of see how it changed. And I think that is so freaking cool. And then, of course, after that, there were improvements to accuracy, radar, satellites, communication, things like that. But I thought that was really, really cool. I thought it was a great way to showcase what we talk about in terms of how things change and how they change in our world, in our society, how things once considered occult is now just like considered boring science. And I freaking love that. All right, witches, I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent. And after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Monday, March 18th. The waxing crescent moon rides the vibes in Cancer today. Here, the moon squares Mercury. Our feelings may be easily hurt by some rash comments with this energy. With Mercury in Aries, folks are not checking their swings, and an errant comment may come off much more aggressive than it was meant to be. Try to remember that this is the energy of the day. These remarks are probably not personal. With the moon in Cancer, we're just a little extra sensitive today. Take some time to lick your wounds a bit before responding. Your daily moon mantra is, the world breaks everyone, but afterwards, you are stronger at the broken places. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
Interested in taking your weed witchery to the next level or wanting to get started? The Weed Witches Journal by author Carrie Connor blends the worlds of cannabis and magic together to help you document, explore, and expand your daily practices. Dig deeper into yourself with intuitive insights, mystical visions, shadow work, or connect to nature for starters. Want to explore your creativity? Dive in with My Vibe, Inspirational Ink, and the Flower Power activities. Looking to practice your skills? Get attuned with pendulum work and one card reading. Plus, document your practices with full moon, new moon, spell tracker, ritual tracker, and more. Order the Weed Witch's Journal now from your favorite bookshop or wherever books are sold.
All right, so this week we are talking about Ostara. We're doing a series on Ostara, and we're going to talk about the history, the lore, what everyone's planning on doing, and I'm going to share something I think is really meaningful that I'm choosing to do for Ostara. So today we're going to talk about the history. And the Boston Public Library, which, like, shout out to my best friend who works there, the Boston Public Library is a really great resource for this sort of thing. I feel like I come across more information from the Boston Public Library about holidays and such than I do anything else. So Ostara, they write, is a Wiccan holiday and one of the eight Sabbats. Ostara celebrates the spring equinox, and the word Ostara comes from the Anglo-Saxon goddess named Esther. E-O-S-T-R-E, Ostara, represented spring and new beginnings. Now, the celebration of spring is present in many ancient customs. Across all cultures, it seems that Wicca has borrowed from many of them for Ostara. Like many other spring celebrations in other cultures, Ostara symbolizes fertility, rebirth, and renewal. This time of year marked the beginning of agriculture cycles, and farmers would start planting seeds. Many of the symbols of Ostara have roots in other traditions, and the use of rabbits and hares is one such example. In medieval times in Europe, the March hare was seen as a fertility symbol and a sign of spring. The species of rabbit is nocturnal most of the year, but in March it is mating season for the animal. During mating season, March hares are seen all day long, and additionally, female of the species can get pregnant with a second litter while pregnant during their first with their first litter. Ugh, that sounds horrible. This explains why they were used as symbols of fertility, so they could get pregnant while pregnant. No, thank you. I know technically that can happen, like, modern day, like, humans rarely, but oof. Modern-day Wiccans or pagans might go outside to meditate and perform a simple ritual to welcome the spring. Another common way to celebrate the coming spring is to plant seeds. Some families incorporate seasonal candy, such as peeps and chocolate rabbits, with their kids to help them get in the spirit of the event. And there's a few different books. Actually, someone I know personally, Kira, wrote Rupert's Tales. It's a Wheel of the Year book series for children. Then there is Ostara that was written in 19—Eden McCoy wrote Ostara, and then Carrie Connor wrote Ostara. I think I know Carrie. Do I know Carrie? I wonder if it's a different Carrie. It might be the one I know. I can't tell. But there's many books on Ostara, and I think that's really, really neat. So Ostara and the hare, not ancient, but not as modern as some skeptics think. And this is from the blog of Library of Congress. So if you're curious about modern holiday beliefs and calendar customs, you might be reading or doing research about them online. And chances are you come across some stories that the presenters claim are ancient. This is a big problem in the Wiccan world. One popular story you might have seen recently involves the origin of the Easter Bunny. Essentially, the tale is that Ostara, the ancient Germanic goddess of spring, transformed a bird into a hare, and the hare represented laying colored eggs for her festival. Some online sources claim this story is very old, while others say it was invented in the 1980s. So whom should you believe? As it turns out, neither one. The writer of this blog from Library of Congress traced it back to the late 17th century. So it's not as ancient as some Wiccan blogs may lead you to believe, but it's not as modern as some other ones may lead you to believe either. And I think that is a great lesson for us. I feel like we talked about this last year, but again, I still think it is a really meaningful thing to remind ourselves of. right? That these stories aren't as ancient as maybe some authors like to claim they are, you know? So we have to be mindful and skeptical. So I want to share with you kind of what I plan to do in honor of Ostara in renewal. So I shared that last year I went through a really kind of not great friendship breakup. I discovered a lot of lying, things I thought to be true for a really long time I discovered weren't. And I knew this person was lying throughout our whole relationship. I just thought I knew what the lies were. I think that gave me a sense of control. But I would soon learn that the lies were very, very big. Lying about entire relationships, entire people, it was big. It was really, really big. And it really shook my reality in a way I never had experienced before that was really traumatizing. And it's been about a year since I've had the friend break up with this person. And I've really healed from a lot of it. I've never missed this person. Once I was done, I really was done. I healed from maybe their treatment of me, and I've kind of gotten over the fact that I can't control that they're doing this to other people. But the part that I've really struggled to deal with is the manipulation of my reality. That was a very traumatizing experience for me personally. To feel that I had 6-7 years of someone very, very close to me telling me all these things that weren't true or were manipulated or something along those lines was really hard for me to grasp. And I've noticed I've really struggled with that area particularly. And I have found it has actually started to become a little bit of a trigger for me. If I feel like I get information that changes what I thought was true, I almost will have like a panic attack. And I'll be like, wait, now I need to know for sure what is true, what is true, what is true, because my reality was manipulated. Now, I am, you know, being vulnerable. I like to be vulnerable on this podcast. I don't like to act as if I am this person who has it completely together all the time and I am the answer to all your questions and look to me and buy my courses for the answer of the universe. I think that's like really not cool behavior. And if you hear anything like that from anyone you listen to, you want to run. Okay. I am not a perfect person. I have vulnerabilities. I have traumas. And I believe those things helps me be a more empathetic person. I believe those things helps me be kinder and gentler to other people. And it doesn't take away from my expertise and my experiences and my knowledge base, right? It's like from Barbie, which says my ability to hold both emotion and logic actually enhances my abilities. And I believe that to be true. So, however, I have finally decided that I'm going to seek therapy for abuse recovery. And it was really hard to make that decision. I think I was worried. I think I've worked so hard in my life to be taken seriously, and I've worked really hard in my life to gain any ounce of respect. And I think there was a fear of like, well, if people know I'm seeking therapy for this sort of thing, will I lose any respect I gained? And will people think that I'm not someone to take seriously? And that was really hard for me to overcome. Of course, as someone with a background in psychology, I know it's not true, but it always feels different when it's us, right? It always feels different because we're harder on ourselves than we are other people. So in honor of Ostara and new beginnings and planting seeds, I am very excited to start a new chapter of recovery from abusive relationships, PTSD, and trauma. And I wanted to share that because I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast are caretakers. And I know a lot of people who listen carry a lot on their shoulders for other people. And it can be scary to admit when we need help, because I know for me personally, it was like, but I'm the one who helps others. To admit I need help, does that invalidate the help I've given? And I think that's something a lot of people think. And I know for me personally, I won't say their name, but a friend of mine who I know who went to therapy for a very similar reason, knowing she did that gave me the strength to do it. So my goal is that me sharing this with you, maybe one day, if you're ever like, oh, should I go to therapy for this? I want you to think, maybe, you know, well, if Tanya could do it publicly and admit it publicly, I can do it too. And so that is what I am doing for Astar. That is how I am honoring myself and my journey and recovery from a very not cool situation that I was in for a long time. And, you know, people say, oh, you couldn't have seen the signs. You couldn't have known. And I think the hard thing for me is that I did see the signs and I did know. And I chose to continue on anyways. It just wasn't as big as I thought it was. It was bigger than I thought, you know? So I wanted to be vulnerable. I wanted to share that. Yeah, I'm really excited for this journey. I'm really excited to work through these issues that I've developed. Because, you know, when you trust somebody and they use that trust to completely manipulate your entire world, it leaves a gaping wound that you can heal from all the other issues, all the other things, all the other wrongs you feel like they did. But that wound is really easy to open. And I don't want it to open anymore. I don't want to question if the people around me are being real and real with what they're saying and real with, I just can't do it anymore. So I've decided to seek assistance. I'm very lucky to have support and friends in my life who love me and care about me and who have gone, they have moved. I've had friends who have moved mountains for me in this situation, and I've never felt so lucky and so blessed to have such incredible people in my life. But now it's to a point where I need help that they can't and aren't obligated to give me. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share. So this week we will be talking about Astara, things you can do, things you can do with others, lore. We talked about the history and the hair, and I think I'm really excited. So if you have any questions about Astara, please feel free to leave them on the Discord or the Facebook, and we will get to it this week. All right, witches. So we are wrapping up this episode of the Witch Daily Show. We do have a shout out. Teresa Dawn, Teresa Utenacious Mystical Selkie. Shell B, you innocent, noble land mermaid. Beafrias, you Arcadian poetic kitten. And Cat J, you fancy mystical Valkyrie queen. I also want to give a little shout out to Milo and Jude. Thank you for listening. And we do have a card pull from a new deck. Our deck now is a Jane Austen tarot deck. These are beautiful cards. I'm going to tell you right now, there are very few decks you pick up and they feel like when you first picked up a deck ever. And these have that feeling. I would say I don't think it's a great deck to get if you're learning tarot. The book is not extensive, and I did find it difficult to find the card pull within the deck or within the booklet. So I wouldn't recommend this for new tarot readers. I would recommend it for tarot readers who are already proficient and who want a beautiful Jane Austen-esque deck. So our card today is the Hierophant. Frank Churchill in Emma is a member of the landed gentry, but things on the surface are not always what they seem. Emma does not trust Frank despite his gentlemanly exterior. Super cute. So we can deduce that means like, hey, just think more deeply about the people in your life. I think that makes a lot of sense. And maybe not trust exteriors. Fair. All right, witches, any books, decks, headline sources that we referenced today can be found in the podcast episode description or witchpod.com. And we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye.
Witches. We hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.